Hey, my name is Emily Merrill. I'm a taco-loving people connector, and I'm obsessed with playing the name game and all things networking. I'm the founder of Second Degree Society, a female-focused networking community, as well as a business coach for female business owners passionate about bringing their business to the next level with the help of events, community, and connections. I crave deep conversations and am continuously curious to see what makes people tick, and I'm invested in uncovering their stories with some life lessons along the way. This podcast is aimed to inspire and educate as you tackle your busy day. So join the conversation and tune in for the Second Degree Podcast. I'm your host, Emily Merrill, and today I'm so excited to have my friend, Annette Bloom Pearson. She is a leadership and career coach on today's Second Degree Podcast. Annette, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
It's such a pleasure to start the new year with you. New year, new you, new us. When do we stop that? When do we stop saying new year? Happy new year to people.
I think we can keep saying it because we're going to have so many different types of new years coming up. We have Lunar New Year, then we'll have the Jewish New Year. So all year we have an opportunity to reset and reframe.
I like that. We're just new yearing all over the place. So Annette, speaking of New Year's, I just got off a call with an individual who was looking at her career and was in between. She left a company and now looking for a new company. And I feel like a lot of companies did some massive layoffs right before the holidays, which to me as an outsider feels just cruel. Especially to arm people with going into the holiday season jobless, but also I understand from a business perspective, they're doing what's best for their bottom line. But as a career coach and leadership coach, what are your feelings about like all these people that are reapproaching the job market at the beginning of a new year? Do you have any advice for them?
Well, hopefully they had an opportunity to relax during the holidays and they gave themselves the space and the time to think about what good happened during the year and during the careers that they had with their previous companies. And as they kick off the job search or maybe even a new career search, because this is an excellent opportunity to do something new, maybe align yourself to new passions or values that you haven't necessarily considered before, hopefully they are giving themselves the space to be organized. So really setting up some systems for themselves in order to do the research, make some connections in the fields that they're interested in, and also the grace to allow themselves to take things at a pace that is meaningful and acceptable to them. So giving themselves the opportunity to stay healthy and stay focused without forcing themselves to do something that feels yucky and too harsh on their bodies.
Yeah, I appreciate that the angle on things because so often people assume a layoff or a change of job means the end of the world. But to your point, it's also a moment of space and giving people that opportunity to hit the reset button and to look at the drawing board and be like, do I like what I was doing for the last 10 years of my life? Or do I want to give myself a refresh, which I think we should all do, whether or not you like your job or your career, your business, it's a great and healthy practice. But before I go deeper into the career search bandwagon, Annette, let's learn a little bit about you. Who is Annette Bloom Pearson? And what brought you into the world of leadership and career coach?
Well, that is a good question. I have had a very windy road throughout my career. I went to college on the East Coast in Atlanta, Georgia, and everyone was going to New York afterwards. So I decided I'll also go to New York afterwards. And having deferred a year from the law school I thought I was going to go to. I took a job at a conference company and then made the decision that I would not be going back to law school and spent the next almost 8 years in New York going from job to job, trying out sales, marketing, everything from a legal recruiting service to the Princeton Review to Forbes.com. And after about 7 years, I thought it maybe it's time to make a move and not get stuck in a tiny apartment with five roommates and a cat. So I took the GMAT and I ended up at UCLA Anderson in beautiful, sunny California, where I somehow got put onto the tech track. I really thought I was going to be going into brand management for luxury goods. Specifically, I wanted to become a professional wino and do brand management for wineries in Napa. That didn't happen, but I did end up coming to the Bay Area through a job at HP and then at Cisco, where I landed after I graduated, moved to Google after about 8 years at Cisco. And it was while I was at Google that the pandemic hit, and I had a lot of time to think about my life and think about what I love doing. And what I love doing is connecting with people. I love supporting people. I love giving advice, but also being a listener and a sounding board. So coaching sounded like the perfect opportunity, and the planets aligned, and I was able to make that transition starting at the beginning of 2021, as I also transitioned into becoming a parent for the first time.
Just, rip off all the band-aids at once. It'll be less painful that way.
Simultaneous launches, we called it.
I love it. And it's I you failed to mention something that I also love about you so much is you as you are such a connector of individuals, and such a builder of community. I had the privilege of meeting Annette in person back in the olden days, as I call it, PP, pre-pandemic, at one of my networking events, and then having the privilege of attending hers, where you hosted something called Shalon, which I don't know if you're doing as frequently anymore, but can you tell us a bit more about Shalon?
Yes, Shalon was my first baby, and it will be coming back. And I hope that everyone who's listening will be able to attend at least one Shalon in 2024 and beyond. Shalon was based on my thought that we just didn't communicate enough as a society. And this really came to a head in the end of 2016 when we got the results from the election, and they weren't exactly what some of us had anticipated or wanted. And I thought, how can we bring people together to have discussions about really important and challenging topics in a way that feels welcoming and safe? And my answer was, of course, food. So getting people around the dinner table was something that I wanted to use as a catalyst for conversation and for action-oriented learning. And I thought, instead of doing a panel or a session with a speaker, why not have experts sit at the table and moderate a conversation about really challenging issues like homelessness or healthcare reform or identity and gender identity? So that's exactly what I did. And over the course of, 4 years, I hosted probably 20 plus dinners where people came and talked and learned, and there was no small talk, and everyone met people that had passions that were similar to their own, and they left with new connections and new ideas and new motivation to take charge of things that they wanted to change in their neighborhoods and their communities.
And you did it over dinner too, so it was a very not I don't want to say a formal thing, but like people had to know that they were going to be there for a set duration of time and have to participate.
It was a commitment, that's definitely for sure. But I think once you've attended one Shalon and you tried the food that our amazing chefs were preparing, and you saw how many incredible people were there and how many new friends you might be making, or even just an opportunity to drink a bunch of wine on a Friday night while having deep conversation felt good. And so I think the commitment was really the least of anyone's worries.
Oh,
it was
I love
it was awesome, and I miss it.
Can we bring those to Denver, please? Because I love, 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 love. I love that idea, and I love that marriage of the words. Can you tell, for those that aren't familiar, of where the title, or maybe it's, I'm wrong, but it, I believe it's a marriage
no,
of
you're absolutely
Shabbat
right.
And Salon yeah. together?
It is. You're right. So when I came up with the name, I had already been hosting Shabbat dinners for friends. And these were a group of friends who were Jewish and non-Jewish, people who I just wanted to spend time with. And being able to get together on a Friday night after a long week was really meaningful to us. And it was a lot easier before people's families started growing. But I love the idea that Shabbat brings to anyone in the world, which is you can disconnect from the work week. You can disconnect from what's regular and have this really beautiful divine experience. And then of course I married that Shabbat concept with Salon, which is a space for conversation, a space for learning, a space for contemplation. And we came up with Shalon.
I love it so much. Because even for me, before SDS was created, I started going to this salon, this older woman, this chic woman, Lavelle Alexa from Dallas. And she hosted these salons in New York City in her beautiful apartment. And they were always, they always had like a caterer going around. And it was these individuals that you would never get access to if you were just a normal 20-something-year-old trying to get in front of them. And she would invite them into her home. And it was these handpicked women and that were able to ask this person questions. And I loved that. I loved the specialness of it. And I think there's something so special about a Shabbat dinner too. And it's not a million people. There's intimacy there, and there's tradition. And I like the marriage of the two words.
Absolutely. I think you've hit the nail on the head that it's something special. And when something feels special, we're much more inclined to really be our true selves and be authentically who we are when we're there. And that invites better connections, and it invites something that is sustainable and will last in mm-hmm. our personal lives and also in our communities.
Completely agree. So, and that's something that I mean, I've always felt like this familiarity with you, but something that I have heard is you were going to go to law school, and you were on the track for law school, and you took a bet on yourself in a different direction. How did that feel, saying, walking away from something that was like a sure thing? Like you could be still grinding the grindstone or whatever they grind till midnight at a law firm right now. But what was that decision process like for you to walk away from it?
That's a really good question. And the first thing that came up for me thinking about that is it was probably one of the first times that I let my strengths, my values, and my passions guide me mm-hmm. instead of doing what was expected and what I had potentially committed to for the wrong reasons. I thought about what I liked doing and what I was good at doing, and law school really didn't fit into that. I think being a lawyer is incredible, and there's so much knowledge and education and finesse that comes with that education. But for me, long reading is not something I do well unless it's fiction. I don't like going into a lot of the crazy details that go historically into cases. And I realized that I would really struggle and have just a bad time at law school and probably as a lawyer. So taking that bet on myself felt really good. It felt like I was giving myself an opportunity to explore. And that's exactly what I did while I was in New York. I explored socially, I explored professionally, I explored in terms of becoming a leader. It was where I really grew in terms of my first alumni association leadership roles, which turned into so many other connections that I used throughout my professional life and my personal life. And it was it was just the right thing. And I'm so happy that I did that and that I also had the support from my family and my community to take that pivot.
I hear you, what you're saying about like listening to your own intuition and not leaning into what someone expects you to do or wants you to do. If you're a 20-something year old listening to this, or maybe you're fresh out of college and you're thinking, oh my God, but my girlfriend who is a doctor, she has a path, or my lawyer friend, she has a path and I have no path. And what I hope you glean from this episode is that taking that bet on yourself unveils so much more of a path that you even know is available to you. So Annette, when you introduced yourself, you told us about working in legal for a moment, working at Forbes.com, working and developing your leadership skills. And it's, while it might read at in your 20s, like that you went to various places, you also were able to understand and discern what you liked and what you disliked, which I think a lot of people who have one track don't give themselves an opportunity to do.
Totally. That's extremely valuable insight.
Right? No, it's, I mean, and, you know, I know you specialize in leadership and career coaching, and I've been having these conversations a lot, but insert different words here, but leadership and leader and people seeing themselves as a leader, so often people self-select out. They're like, oh, yeah, I have a team of 27, but I'm no leader. I'm no leader. Or I have another client who works in luxury, and people will self-select out and be like, oh no, I'm not in luxury. I'm like a budget traveler. And there's certain words that people can't identify with. So can we delve a little bit more into like what is a leader and what does that mean to you?
Absolutely. I think exploring that is something that can be really personal, because leadership, when you want to be a leader versus who you look to as a leader, can be very different things. But when I think of leaders, I think of people who provide opportunities for the people that they are either working with or in community with to grow, to expand their skills, and to have impact. So a leader can be someone who has a title, or it can be someone who isn't titled at all, but who provides coverage, who provides insight, who provides a path forward, depending on what someone in their community is trying to accomplish. So I work with a lot of people in the MBA environment, and they are all leaders in their own right, and they all approach it from a very different way. So I think of people who are students, although they've had professional experience, and they think about leadership as maybe just organizing a learning team. Some of them think of leadership as driving an entire student club so that they are raising money to support, disadvantaged children in the surrounding communities. So to me, a good leader is someone who is willing to put themselves last, who is willing to think about the ultimate goals that an organization or a community or a team is trying to achieve. They're willing to say, I don't know, and learn alongside their team. And they're willing to put someone forward who has the knowledge or the tools or the experience, or maybe someone who needs those experiences in order to help everyone grow and not focus all of the attention or the kudos on themselves.
Yeah. I'm like the person who focuses all the kudos and attention on themselves. What do we call them? Narcissist? No, I'm just kidding.
A narcissist. Yeah.
An attention.
So many good... So many words came to mind that probably aren't appropriate for the public.
Schmuck. No, I think that's a really poignant way to recognize or to acknowledge a leader is that it's the person that's learning along with their team, or acknowledging that they're not the number one priority, that they want to make sure that everyone gets to safety before they themselves are safe. I always think of like a firefighter or something like a tangible. I think it's hard in the corporate world to sometimes identify as a leader when you're behind a computer and you're not technically ushering a kitten to safety.
Yeah, I think it can be hard when it's not tangible, like, the example that we hear a lot of putting someone else's oxygen mask on them before you put your own on. And when I think of true leaders in a corporate environment, I think of people who are willing to stand up for someone in the room, even when that person's not in the room, to mention their name when opportunities come up. For someone who is willing to ask the tough questions of an organization so that their team doesn't have to, and is willing to fight for what they believe in and set that example for the people who are working alongside them.
I love those examples. So then, as an individual who's listening to this, who might not still see themselves as a leader, are there any tips for embodying more of a leader in yourself every single day?
So many, and it again can be very personal. So, if someone who's listening to this is not working with a coach, I highly recommend reaching out to a coach like myself or many other people in Emily's community who work with individuals on boosting their confidence and boosting their leadership skills. But I'll say that when I'm working with clients, one of the things that is really effective is thinking about leadership qualities in someone that you truly admire and the things that stand out most about those people. And thinking about just one way to incorporate one of those qualities into your day-to-day activities. So if you think that someone is an amazing leader because they make decisions really well and they think well on their feet, practice making decisions around little things and then build up to making decisions about things that matter more without taking too much time to really go back and forth and overanalyze, but making decisions based on your intuition or based on what you can be confident that you know without second guessing yourself. And as you build that skill, then start to think about other leadership qualities you admire and build those into your repertoire day by day.
I love that. So treat it as a daily practice.
Yes, absolutely. Like one of your favorite friends, the Atomic Habits are things that we do every single day and we build on each other.
Gosh, James Clear, you seem to know always how to say the right thing. Side note, I had lunch or I had coffee yesterday with someone who I went to college with. And I was like, and how James Clear went to Denison. He's like, what? Who? Who's James Clear? I'm like, Atomic Habits? He's like, never heard of it. Like, what? You've never, do you have you read a New York Times bestseller list recently? He's like, I'm not a book reader. I'm an audio person. I'm like, audio books? It was wild when he went to our college and he still didn't know who he was. But then,
It fascinates me how people take different paths, and we all end up, with similar goals and similar outlooks on life, even by coming at them from such completely different directions. And I guess that's the beauty of the world, is that we bring totally new things into each other's world without even trying.
1,000%. Yeah, and definitely, we definitely live in a different industry. I brought up Brené Brown and he's like, what are you talking about? So it makes you cognizant of the silos that we can all surround ourselves in, or the sound chambers or the echo chambers that we all live in. So this is a fun reminder too for people to surround yourself with people who are like you, but also go out in the world and meet people who are so different from you and hear what is in their world so you can have perspective. But that's a squirrel.
Yes.
Whole different
That's
episode.
A great reminder. It makes me also think about the fact that we get so hung up on people who are in our industry or in our little silos, and we start comparing ourselves to them, thinking, I'll never be like so-and-so, when the majority of the world has never heard of so-and-so. And why are we comparing ourselves to someone who has just convinced us that they have a superpower that we don't have, when in reality, they are just peacocking on social media or wherever they are? And we don't need to compare ourselves to people who are out there in that way. We should focus on what matters to us, to the people we actually know, to the people who have an impact on our lives, so that what we're doing feels good, as opposed to it feels like a constant race towards something that we'll never achieve.
Yeah, no, I'm 1,000% with you. And while we're on the topic of James Clear, one of the things he said in, I did an interview with him at Denison, and I asked him, I was like, how did you promote your book? Your book is everyone, I thought everyone knows your book, but most humans know your book at this point. And he said that he really focused in on one particular echo chamber. So for him, he talked a lot about habits, and people who do habits are usually in like the fitness world or the CrossFit world. And I think I might be misquoting him, but I want to say it was CrossFit that he focused on, CrossFit or like bodybuilding. And so he started sending his book to that particular industry. And so then they started sharing it on their stories or on their posts. And so everyone in that industry or everyone in that echo chamber thought that this book was, everyone knew about it, but it's really like the super, super, super small slice of the pie that knew about it. But it helped create that ripple effect of, oh, you haven't heard of James Clear?
Yeah, very smart.
Yeah, so as we do. So Annette, to be cognizant of time, how can people learn more about you? And, you know, if they are ready to dive into their career search or re-up what they're doing in this world and really show up as a leader?
Well, my website is the best way for people to find out the most about me without actually having a conversation. And should I spell it out or?
I'll drop it in the show notes too. So just say it out loud what it is.
Yep. So it's www.AnnetteBloomPearson.com. Very easy. And once someone is there, they can easily contact me. They can set up a calendar meeting so we can actually have a conversation. And they can also decide if they want to join a group coaching program or sign up for a workshop or anything else that sounds good.
Ah, I love it. Well, Annette, before we wrap up, I've got some 6 fast questions for you today. Are you ready?
Ooh, I love this.
Okay.
I am.
Tell us an unknown fun fact about Annette.
I'm in a pretty open book. An unknown fact is I can do handstands.
Ooh.
Headstands. I can't do handstands, but I'd like to.
Okay, 2024 goal, handstands, currently doing headstands.
And pull-ups, yeah.
Yep, pull-ups, no thanks. Who would be a dream person to be connected with or to have at a salon? I'm going to retweak that.
Oh, Adam Grant.
Oh, good one. Yeah, I concur. What show are you currently watching?
I just finished the 3rd season of Lupin, which is a French show about a thief spy kind of guy. It's amazing. Highly recommend.
I've seen the advertisements, but I have not seen it. Okay, good to know. What book, either personally or for business, are you reading?
I also just finished a bunch of books over the holiday, but I will say that my biggest recommendation right now is Demon Copperhead.
Oh, I want to read that. Okay, good to know. And then my final question for you today is, what permission do you want to give to our listeners today?
I would like to give permission for everyone to think of themselves as the badass leader that they are.
Amen to that. Well, Annette, thank you for sharing your wonderful tips and your story. I am so excited for hopefully everyone walking away feeling like a bigger, badass, more badass leader, and for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
And thank you. And listeners, if you like today's episode, give us a review, share with your friends, and we'll see you the next time on the Second Degree Podcast with Emily Merrill. Have a wonderful day, everyone. Bye.